Ohio State training camp is barreling right along, if you can believe it. This is the third Thursday of Ohio State practice since they reconvened. And in a cosmic coincidence, it's a Three Things Thursday on the beat. Welcome back. I am Austin Ward, joined by Jeremy Birmingham on the Austin and Berm Show. And we're going to be back out at Berm. Third Thursday. Mm-hmm. It's gone fast. And there's no
slowing. It's crazy. Once the off season gets to a point and there's like a hill, right? It's like a roller coaster. It's like click, 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 click. And then it's just straight downhill. And then it's January. And then you start to click, click, click again. But these last couple weeks have been click, click, clicking a lot faster than they normally click, click, click. So I'm glad for that, because honestly, the off season has been too long and full of terrors. So let's get to it. But before then, we have to talk about like defensive line some more, because that's what we're going to be dealing with a little later this morning at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center.
That's right. It is the third Thursday of training camp. Going to need somebody to count up how many times Berm just said click to start the show, because it felt like a lot to me. It was way more than three. But thing number one is about the defensive line. We get to hear from Larry Johnson and the Ohio State defensive line, probably the position group that we talked about the absolute most throughout that click, click, click of the offseason. And it feels like, I don't know, my opinion on that, Berm, is that this group has probably come the furthest along in this month, answered the most questions, at least on the field, and now they get to answer a ton of them in the Woody in front of a microphone.
Yeah, if we were gauging this simply on how different is the rhetoric around the position group than it was in the spring, I don't think that there's a single position group on the Ohio State roster that the rhetoric is like this drastically changed. Other than this, the defensive line group has felt like they've exceeded expectations, but it doesn't matter if you're doing that in August, right? So what matters is how that shapes up when you go up against a pretty good offensive line against on Texas in 2 weeks. So, but it's certainly better than the alternative, which is to say that like, oh, this team is still struggling. We're still lacking guys. We still don't know if we have someone ready to step up. Clearly, they feel like they have guys who have elevated themselves and put themselves in that conversation. And now you have to just maintain it and make sure that it's not just lip service.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are still questions that have to be answered. Even if you are flashing in practice, even if you have a productive scrimmage, is that depth at a point on the defensive tackle spot specifically where Larry Johnson would feel comfortable to play five, six, seven guys? I know that we've had conversations about the rotation in the past, and it is not about the fact that you should only play two guys for the duration of a season. It was about when and how those guys were deployed. There's no question at all that you need more than two defensive tackles. If it was just a matter of you turned off fatigue and injuries on a video game, then you would be fine with Edric Houston and Caden McDonald. That would be great. You'd have two of the better talents in the country at that three tech in the nose position, and you could just roll right along. But that is not the reality, especially over a 16 game season. And Larry Johnson has always been willing to dip into that depth when it is capable of performing at the level that he deems necessary for Ohio State. So is Jason Moore at that point? Is Taiwan Malone at that point? Are the flashes that we saw from Eric Mensah legitimate? Is the offseason buzz that was building for Will Smith behind Caden McDonald, is that real? No, I think we may not get a definitive answer from that on Thursday, but and I bet we hear a lot more of conversation about, well, let's get through scrimmage number two, and then everything will narrow down with the depth chart and the plans for that moving forward. But you know, there have been times where I feel like Larry Johnson has exaggerated the number of players that can play. There was one camp where it was like, well, 14 guys can play for Ohio State, and that definitely was not the case. So I'm curious what his actual read is on how many he would like to use and how many are currently ready as of Thursday the 14th in his mind to go do that.
I don't remember the exact adjective a year ago, but was it that Jason Moore was the ideal three tech? Was that what he said? That he was the ideal three tech in the Ohio State defensive scheme. And instead of allowing him to grow into that last year, Ohio State moved Edric Houston into that spot. And now he's the ideal three tech. So the lack of discussion about Jason Moore in the last 9 months, I think, is actually shocking, all things considered, based on his recruiting pedigree, where he came from, the size, the athleticism, the fact that he has not been anointed in some way as one of those next guys, I think is the most interesting thing to me about that position group. And I'm curious to hear from Larry Johnson's perspective why maybe that hasn't come to fruition yet. You know, and I think I'm also, you know, as we talk about these things, whatever things are on your mind regarding the defensive line, we've spent a lot of time putting in pen Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson at defensive end for good reason. Those two are going to be the starters. But I do think, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about how you need more than two defensive tackles, but I don't know that, I don't know why there's such confidence that there's more than two defensive ends at this point, if that makes sense. And not that I'm trying to like sound the alarm bells, but what has given Ohio State the confidence to feel like Bo Atkinson and CJ Hicks are going to be difference makers at defensive end behind Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson? Bo Atkinson lost his black stripe on Wednesday, so clearly he's doing the right things. CJ Hicks, we hear all about from everyone in practice and what he does. So how confident are they that those two guys are going to be able to translate that into a game day performance week in and week out? Because the defensive tackle is one part, but like if you're not getting consistent pass rush on the edge, doesn't matter how good your defensive tackles are.
Yeah, I think that it, and we'll see where they are in that development, where Larry Johnson evaluates that. They're almost two separate conversations, aren't they? Like CJ Hicks, it's, you know, he can rush the passer. You know, he's got the bend, the hips, the, you know, tenacity that he's had the previous experience as a blitzer. Like he can get after the quarterback. Don't think there's any doubt about that. And then it becomes, if you're going to play defensive end for Larry Johnson or somewhere on the edge, standing up or not, you better be able to stop the run. And I think that's where the CJ Hicks evaluation, that's where the rubber meets the road. And it's sort of the opposite for Bo Atkinson, which you'd think, well, how can that be? He had 7 sacks a year ago for North Carolina. They were kind of all lumped into some of the quote unquote lesser opponents on North Carolina.
Did it happen in 2 games?
I think it was 3, but I don't mean that as a slight. Like the production is the production. It still happened in a college football game. He's done it. He's shown it. But it wasn't as if he was doing it week after week after week against ACC opponents for North Carolina. So, you know, I think as we've watched him and some of the feedback that we've received from a week and a half, 2 weeks of practice is like, he's incredibly strong. You'd look at him lined up against the rest of those defensive ends, like, well, it looks like he's a couple inches taller and he's got a bunch of extra weight and strength on him that maybe these other guys don't have. And you just say, well, okay, he can do the part that Larry Johnson is really going to want. Feels like he can stop the run and he's going to be a handful out there. Can he get to the quarterback? They're almost like, if you were able to put CJ Hicks and Bo Atkinson together, you'd be like, well, you really have something here. This guy can do it all. But yeah. I don't know when you separate them and you go back to reality and not Frankenstein's lab, like there are still things I think about their game that, to your point, they probably still need to improve to get the Ohio State defensive line depth where it wants to be on the edge.
Yeah, I mean, last year, I think that's one of my bigger questions for Larry Johnson, philosophy-wise, is he willing, or is he at a point in his career where he's understanding or believing that the defensive mindset is different than it used to be? Like, you can specialize. You can put guys out there for individual roles and not always have to be like, well, if you can't, it's similar, I think, in the conversation to the tight end conversation we had on Wednesday morning Stockwatch about like, okay, so Jelani Thurman, the perception was he wasn't doing the little things as a blocker. And Ohio State has always said, if you can't block, you can't play tight end. But at some point you just have to let guys do the things they do well and then try to build them into something else. So with CJ Hicks, like if he struggles against the run, which is what we've seen out of him in the last 3 years when he's played at linebacker, is what he's put on film good enough against pass rush situations or in pass rush situations to say, hey, we'll continue to mold the rest of this. We'll work on the rest of this. But he's so good at this specific thing, there's no way we can not have him on the field. And I don't know that Larry Johnson throughout his career has proven flexible in that regard. I think it's been like, if you can't do everything, you can't play. And so I do wonder if maybe the relationship with Matt Patricia, how far back that goes, maybe it's good enough to give a little bit of different thought for Larry, because it didn't seem like Jim Knowles was able to bring that out of him.
And that still hasn't even got into how Logan George fits in for this group. Right. You also brought him out of the transfer portal, Ohio State did in the winter. And, you know, how much consideration is there still for Caden Curry or anyone else from edge to kick inside to three technique? I know that there have been snaps for Caden Curry on the inside throughout this camp. How many would be needed? How likely is that as an option? Because as you mentioned, like, we expect him to be starting opposite Kenyatta Jackson against Texas. But, you know, there's also all of this conversation percolating with Matt Patricia and moving guys around and getting the best 11 on the field, which are also the best 11 for a particular situation based on opponent and based on, you know, what they're how they're trying to attack a team. So there's probably not going to be a definitive answer one way or another. It's just another thing that you have to file away in the back of your brain. And does Caden Curry like that? I think we've asked him in the past, would you play other spots? And he would always say, I'll play anywhere they ask me to. Like, does his skill set translate there? Does he view that as a fit? I'd be pretty curious about that later on Thursday as well.
Yeah. Or is Logan George more likely to be the inside mover? I mean, there's certainly flexibility with all these guys, which is certainly what Ohio State wants. That's why you recruit athletes of this caliber, because they can experiment and move in and out. And you know, is Arvell Reese still in the conversation? Are they still looking at packages where they move him down to an edge rusher type of a role? So I think that Larry Johnson, despite not having what we would consider a lot of returning experience, like, I think they maybe have more chess pieces in this defensive line group than they've had in years when it comes to just guys who can do a lot of different things. It's not this is not a group you can pigeonhole into one position, with the exception of, I think, Caden McDonald. Everyone else is sort of able to move all around.
Probably Caden and Kenyatta both, right? I mean, I think
but Kenyatta has played inside a little bit in over the last couple of years when they've had the Rushman package. He's been out there at three tech. So I wouldn't expect that he'll move around, because he seems to be pretty locked in as like the man at defensive end. But even his skill set allows him to do those things if he really wanted to. Like, he's that prototype. When, if you remember back in 2017, 2018 in the Tyquan Lewis era, like, the goal was to have every defensive lineman be 6'5", 275 pounds, and then just let them all play basically the same position, but just move them all around. So Kenyatta fits that mold. But other than he and Caden McDonald, like I said, I think you kind of have that this year.
It's pretty wild to just consider that the Tyquan Lewis era, but that's what it really was. But it was. Yeah,
I want to give him more credit. You know, Tyquan was one of those first guys. Him and Draymond Jones were like the pieces that I think Ohio State saw. I'm like, hey, we can actually do a lot of stuff if we just have guys like this.
Yeah, no, it's true. They have a lot of talented guys on that roster. And I was thinking, as watch list season has wound down here, and we get time for some real games, I think we should remove Jeremiah Smith from this equation. But thing number two was, like, your kind of a bold prediction on who might win an individual award for Ohio State this year. And let's just agree that we both are taking Jeremiah to win the Biletnikoff.
I don't think he will win it, because they don't like when Ohio State wins awards like that.
I would be absolutely shocked if he doesn't win it.
We've had a lot of conversations this offseason. We don't know how teams are going to guard this guy. We don't know if you're just going to see everybody triple bracket him the way Texas did. I mean, his numbers, as we've discussed on other episodes of the Austin and Berm show and the beat, like, I think his numbers realistically this year are not going to be as explosive as they were a year ago. I just now, that doesn't mean his national reputation may not open the door for him and win the award, because he should have won it as a freshman. But, you know, Marv won by one vote after his career. And his best season, which was a sophomore season, he didn't win it. So I think that there's a lot of people who vote for awards like that, that believe that their job is to create intrigue around the award instead of just giving it to the best player at the position.
Yeah, I wish you were wrong about that, but you're probably not.
So I don't know if Ohio State's ever won a Mackey Award. for the best tight end in the country, right? I don't know.
Believe that they. I think Cade Stover might have been the first finalist for it, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he was the first. Well, maybe. Yeah. That award's been around for I don't know how long, but I don't think the Ohio State's ever won a Mackey Award, but I think that they're going to this year, and I think it's going to be Max Clair. So that's first one for me would be that. I know you believe Carson Hintzman is going to win the Remington Award.
You trying to take my thunder here?
Yeah, I'm not taking it. I'm teeing it up. This is a softball. This is a nice soft toss your way. But why? And do you think, again, as somebody who understands the mindset of these award voters more than others, because you've been around the inside baseball part of this job for a while, do you think that voters don't want to vote for a guy after his teammate won it last year? Is the Remington a system award?
No, it actually, well, in some ways, it helps you stand out. If a program has developed a reputation for elite play at a certain position, and that has now happened with the Remington Trophy, this has become a dynasty for Ohio State. Voters are more inclined to look at that. It's like, oh, this is the next one through, and he has now, Carson Hintzman is going to start, you know, what, 30-plus games at center by the time it's all said and done, if he stays healthy this year. People will look at that body of work. They'll see there are probably going to be enough stories out there that are feel good about this guy lost his job. Seth McLaughlin replaced him. He won the Remington Trophy Award, was the backup, and then he reclaimed it the following year. He reclaimed it during the playoff push. Like, there will be the feel-good nature of that combined with Ohio State's well-deserved and well-earned reputation with the Remington Trophy. We talked to Billy Price about that award last week on Freaky Friday on the beat. Like, at this point, it is well established that Ohio State knows what it's doing. It has one of the best offensive lines in the country. It is a NFL factory assembly line at every position, but on the offensive line as well recently. So all those things will factor in. Carson Hintzman has the name recognition built in, which is a huge plus. It is difficult at this spot. As you mentioned, what might be tough for Jeremiah Smith is if his numbers drop in the Biletnikoff race, that will make it easier for voters to look elsewhere and try and find somebody else to justify. Well, maybe they won't watch any of the games and they will only take the raw numbers. You can't necessarily do that for the Remington Trophy. And there are definitely, including myself, very few people. I'm not watching every center in the country. Voting on that award is difficult, and having like media members vote on it is probably stupid, because there's just no way that anyone knows enough ball and watches enough ball and is looking at enough centers and knowing what they're looking at to be able to say this guy is definitely the best center. Yeah, I know that Carson Hintzman is incredibly reliable, and if Ohio State does what it's supposed to do on offense, he's probably going to win it.
Yeah, I think that's what makes Seth McLaughlin winning it a year ago so interesting to me, is because he was a center who the year before was like universally mocked for being bad, and then turns around and goes to Ohio State, plays 10 games, wins the Remington. And I don't know how people came to that conclusion, like other than the fact that they heard the way people in Columbus were talking about him. But in the last 10 years, only two programs have won multiple Remington awards, and that's Ohio State and Alabama. Ohio State's won it three times. Alabama's won it twice. And so I think Carson Hintzman certainly has to be considered a favorite for that award heading into this season. When we talk about...
And that's one of my other... Sorry, Berm. That's one of my other problems with the awards, because, you know, as Carson Hintzman stepped in and carried the mantle, took the torch from Seth McLaughlin down in the stretch, like, that would sort of undermine the candidacy as that guy is the best, most important center in college football. And I know that's not the only standard, and I'm not trying to take away Seth's trophy from him, but when you're voting for the awards in mid-season and you're voting for the finalists, like right basically as Seth McLaughlin's getting hurt, that's why all that stuff should wait till the end of the year. Cause even then, like, you could have just said, well, this is the Ohio State Center Award and these Carson and Seth are going to split it. Like, that's the folly in the way that these awards are voted on generally, which is also why I think it may not matter what Jeremiah's numbers are, because everyone is going to, he's probably a semifinalist as we sit here right now without even playing a snap.
Yeah. So those are two that I think are on the table, the Mackey and the Remington. Ohio State confirmed has not had a Mackey Award winner. It started in 2000. So the last guy that would have, I mean, Ohio State hasn't had a first round draft pick at tight end since 1995 or 96 with Ricky Dudley. So I think Max Clair is in a position to change a little bit of history on both sides of those things, because I think he will be a first round pick. Is there, obviously, you think about defense, you think about Caleb Downs and the Lott Trophy or the Bednarik Trophy or any of the other awards for best defensive player. Is he someone who will be, in your mind, penalized by having a monster like Arvel Reese and Sonny Styles playing in front of him? And will they split votes in that way? Or is Caleb's reputation so sterling and so elevated because of his cerebral nature, because of the way he plays the game, that he's barring injury or something catastrophic to him this season, what would it take for him to not win one of those awards as the best defensive player in the country?
Colin Simmons having like 20 sacks.
Yeah.
I mean, that could do it. Now there are separate awards that Caleb Downs can win that Arvel Reese, Sonny Styles, Colin Simmons, anybody else that they're not eligible for. It's like, if Caleb Downs doesn't win the Thorpe for the best defensive back in the country, something went disastrously wrong. Like, there's no way that could happen. That's another award that you can probably just, given the nature of voting in college football, you can probably write his name on that trophy right now, because everyone is just reading mock drafts. And if they're not familiar with Caleb Downs or looking solely at his stat line, which I think is going to be pretty good anyway, you know, they'll look at that and go, well, this guy's considered the best defensive back, the best safety in America. They think he could be a top five pick. I better vote for him here. So I think that will work in his favor the same way that it will for Jeremiah Smith on the other side of the football. We'll see. I think that, you know, the fascinating part is what you've talked about with Arvel Reese and Sonny Styles, and maybe what Arvel's numbers could look like. We'll see the usage. Yeah. And you talked about him in thing number one with rushing the passer and coming off the edge. And there's a world where Arvel puts up numbers that put him in those same kinds of conversations, or maybe getting a little ahead of things because he hasn't actually gone out and done it yet. It's just a lot of, you know, practice observations and coaching talk and all that stuff. But if he's doing what people are describing, he's going to be a surprise candidate for a lot of those national awards as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people nationally were under the impression that Caleb Downs was good at football until about the middle point of the Oregon game, the second Oregon game last year. And then they were like, wait a second, he's actually amazing. because I think people saw his stat line through the first 10, 12 games of the year. He didn't have an interception until the Michigan game. He wasn't, you know, he was making plays, but not his plays that Caleb makes, the things he does, the way he impacts a game, don't always show up in the stat line for him. And so I think a lot of people, after a freshman year at Alabama where he was a freshman All-American, and you're like, yeah, okay, he's fine, but whatever. And then you actually got to watch the way he impacted the defense in the playoff and the way that he forced offenses to change everything that they were doing just by wherever he was lined up. I think a lot of people nationally probably were woken up or awakened to what he is about. And so this year, I think it's going to be a cakewalk for him to win one of those national awards, whether it's the Thorpe, whether it's the Bednarik, I don't know. You know, the Thorpe Award generally, it feels like they try to give it somebody who has the most interceptions or something like that. So I don't know that he'll lead in that sort of statistical category, but the impact and the way that he makes plays is like, you can't really avoid that. And if you're being objective, I don't know how you can.
I think that helps prove my point with my frustration about college football awards. Cause what's the difference? You talked about the postseason games, the playoff run. Everyone was watching those games. There wasn't an overlap. There weren't 50 games on television at the same time. So all of the national opinion makers, all of the national analysts, everyone was fully locked into those. And the full attention was like, wow, some of the tackles that Caleb Downs made that went for like 1 yard gains or a pass breakup that isn't going to move the needle in any other situation. If you're like, holy cow, only one guy could maybe make that play in college football. And it was Caleb Downs. Like, think that's the difficulty, because you just can't. Nobody can. Even if the people listening out here, the most diehard college football fans in the world, they've got 8 games on YouTube TV every Saturday. They're watching coast to coast. It's too much to pay attention and really break that down. And asking people to vote on it is kind of silly when you think about it, but especially if you're making them do it in the middle of the season.
It's very silly. So the Lott Impact Trophy is presented annually to a defensive college football player of the year for their personal character and athletic abilities. Impact is an acronym for integrity, maturity, performance, academics, community, and tenacity. You may as well just give that one to Caleb right now. Like that one's, does that one count as one of the big national awards? I don't know, but I'm going to give that one to him.
Yeah, it's locked up. All right. Thing number three.
Locked it up.
Oh, very nice. And one more thing. Scrimmage number two is Saturday, Burn. Typically, that is when the Blocko jersey is awarded. You and I have both made our wagers that Sonny Styles is going to get it. If he can't, is there a other viable candidate? Sonny himself said Kenyatta Jackson. There was a robust conversation about this on Letterman Row the other day about other options who might get it, who, if they had to overcome some adversity or represent this thing in a way that might be different than Sonny, that other worthy candidates. Sonny said Kenyatta Jackson. Is there anybody else that you think could come in from the top rope and swoop in and claim that jersey for their own?
On the message board over at Letterman Row, I acknowledge that I thought that the potential of Carson Hinsman winning it would be interesting, because I think he's a player that has really redefined his legacy at Ohio State in the last year and a half. And I think people really genuinely respect him and the way he handles his business and the way that he operates on and off the field. Carnell Tate is one that I think is interesting with everything he's had to deal with in his time in Columbus, on and off the field. But I have a really tough time believing anybody other than Sonny Styles wins this, earns that honor this year. The only one Carson Hinsman is one I keep going back to as another possibility. There have been offensive linemen who won it before, like Darren Munford. I don't know that Carson has been through the exact amount of peaks and valleys that Thayer went through with his health and all that stuff. But Carson, as the apex, as the leader of the offensive line, I think is certainly, and I guess it's always gone to a senior, but I guess Austin Sarivald's another one that I just can't keep. I can't really ignore it, but I don't think they'd give it to him as a third year player.
Yeah, I think he'll wind up with a captaincy instead, if I had to guess.
Probably.
Which would be well deserved. I have a hard time envisioning anybody other than that list you named. I think there's no more than five viable candidates, and Sonny Styles in my mind is just so far ahead of everyone else for what they want that to represent. It just would be, I'd be floored. Once people were talking about a year ago, especially at Big Ten Media Days, and Jack Sawyer's like, Cody Simon is that guy. It was like, okay, we hadn't considered that because we were in a rush to put it on an Ohio kid who'd been up. He had his own adversity, who was a leader, and it's like, oh, well, Cody makes a lot of sense too. That's a great point. This one, it's like, even if you tried to convince me of someone else, I'm not sure I'd buy it. It belongs on Sonny, and it would look almost the exact same to the number he's wearing already.
Yeah. And I think when you build out a football team, the guy in the middle of your defense is generally the person who makes things go. That's the straw that stirs the drink. We saw it on Cody last year. It was a perfect fit for him on and off the field. If you listen to Tegra Shibola on Tuesday at the Ohio State media availability, he talked glowingly about how Sonny has transformed himself, not just physically, but because of the way that he had been pushed over the last couple of years by Mick Marotti, and how much that has rubbed off on him. And now that Sonny's the guy leading everyone else, the way that people on the team speak about him, it just seems wholly unrealistic to expect anybody else to earn that this. And I hope it's this weekend, because it'd be nice to have, you know, a little positivity.
Yep. I think we'll get that. I think we'll get the captains. It tends to be that day. They have that scrimmage. They hang out a little bit in the horseshoe.
How many captains, Austin, is this Ohio State team putting forward?
I think Sonny Styles will be a captain for this team. I think Kenyatta Jackson is going to be a captain for this team. I think Austin Sarivald will claim a captaincy. And then I'm a little unclear. Do you have two offensive linemen? Does Carnell Tate leap up and grab that? Could Brandon Ennis be a captain for this team? I'm not, I think that they've, the four is like the ideal number in my mind.
When we consider the quarterback situation, is there any scenario where you think one of these quarterbacks is named a captain without being named a starter first?
Well, Lincoln Keynold is an Iron Buckeye. And if we're looking for, like, I don't think he's going to be the starting quarterback. I don't think he's going to be named the starting quarterback. JT Barrett fits in a similar profile for the way Lincoln has carried himself. And, you know, I think the camaraderie and bond that he has with teammates and showing up at all community service events and all these other things, that they don't have anything to do with playing quarterback, but they carry a lot of weight in the weight room, behind closed doors, all those other things. I'm not closed off to the idea that that could happen for someone who has already made a little bit of quarterback history by being an Iron Buckeye. I think it's unlikely, and it felt like JT being named a captain at that point added to the disjointed nature of the offense. Because, like, you want your captain to be involved. You want him on the field. And I know that that doesn't apply 100% across the board. Sometimes you have a Court Williams or a Cam Babb who their leadership skills go far beyond what they could ever contribute on the field. And they earned that accolade for sure. If you get down to that final spot and you're casting your ballot, I bet Lincoln Keynold is named on a lot of them by his teammates. I wonder if not enough to get to, if you cut it off at four, Carnell Tate probably jumps ahead of enough balance to be the fourth. I don't know. Do you think it's more than four? Where are you at?
I would probably say you go two and two, and two offense, two defense. But I think Sonny and Kenyatta are right there. But I mean, obviously Caleb Downs is kind of the face of the defense. Jeremiah Smith, like, is he too quiet to be a captain? He is a two-time Iron Buckeye. He's the first ever Iron Buckeye as a freshman. He's like all of the ways that Jeremiah leads the team from a non-vocal standpoint. Like, how does that matter? Or is it Brandon Ennis' style and the way he leads that is more important? So, you know, I think back, and we don't have like a Court Williams story or a Cam Babb story or one of those guys on this team for the first time in a long time. Like, so I do think it's interesting, the discussions, because the coaches still have to basically validate whatever the leadership committee decides. And the quarterback situation, I think, is interesting because I don't know if it'll be Monday or Tuesday or next Thursday or whatever, but like, I don't think Ryan Day would put himself in a position to name Lincoln Keynholz a captain unless he was going to turn around and name him the starter. And I don't think that that's going to happen. So it's going to be interesting. But I think two and two is, and that's my preferred method. I think if you have two offensive and two defensive guys, that's the way to go. Was it just one and one last year? Was it three guys last year? It was Jack, Cody,
Travion and Emeka, I believe, were both.
Yeah, so they had four. So that recipe is there. So I guess that's the way I'd go.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, right? And we'll
be not back. Nine captains or anything like that.
No, I don't think that's too many cooks in the kitchen for me. We'll have some snap judgments after we hear from the Ohio State defensive line today, which is Thursday, in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, and we'll be back on Freaky Friday. I don't know what we're gonna do. Gonna open up the mailbag. Well, we're gonna figure that out.
We've got a lot of questions, but if people want to ask more, please do. It's just the Austin and Berm Show at gmail.com. The Austin and Berm Show, not an ampersand, just the word and. But if we get good enough questions and then we're forced to do a mailbag on Friday, that's fine. You know, maybe we can run into somebody inside of the Woody that wants to talk and pop in on a Friday. Who knows? You never know what you run into.
That'd be cool. Maybe we can make that happen. So stay tuned.
You know who I'd like to talk to? I'm gonna put it in the universe. I would like to talk to Max Clair. This is my one more thing, really.
Okay.
Because the way the playoff went, because how long it went, because of the national championship, because the way the offseason went with all these new rules, like, Ohio State is in a position where Bo Atkinson, we've never spoken to. We've never seen him play. Max Clair, barely got a chance to speak to him in February. Ethan Anianwa, Philip Daniels, all these guys. Like, I want more time with these new guys that are actually going to make an impact. And so I want Max Clair on this show. And that's what we're going to it's now my priority to make sure that Max Clair is a fully featured center panel guest of the Austin and Berm show in the near future.
Okay. Well, the tight ends talk next Thursday. So you're going to probably.
Maybe we just get ahead of it. Maybe we just get ahead of it. You know, maybe we just dive right in and say, hey, we'd like to talk to Max.
Okay. I doubt that happens, but we'll certainly try. That's next Thursday for tight ends. This, though, is a Three Things Thursday on the beat. Thanks so much for joining us for way more than three things in reality, but we got through it anyway. Thanks for joining us on 97.1 The Fan's YouTube channel, 10TV's YouTube channel, 10TV Plus, or anywhere that you have downloaded the audio-only podcast version. We appreciate you greatly. He's Berm. I'm Austin. We'll talk to you later from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center as we hear from the Ohio State defensive line.
We want Max.